Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to The Poisoner's Cabinet. I'm Sinead.
And I'm Nick.
And this is your weekly podcast exploring the lives of the great poisoners, macabre murders and captivating crimes from across the centuries, and creating curious cocktails inspired by the Desert Bedell. And it's episode 184!
Speeding through the 80s.
And we're in a different location.
We are.
We are in Nick's flat.
We're in the blue room.
We're in the blue room. Oh, that's a very good name for this room. Oh, I like it.
Yep.
So, first time we're recording in Nick's flat. So, if there's lots of echoing and weird stuff.
It's a weird acoustic going on.
Well, yeah, because you've got some stuff in here.
Yeah. Needs more things on walls and stuff to absorb noises.
Foam. A padded cell,
yes.
If you will.
Egg. Not egg. Was it egg cups? No, like egg boxes.
Imagine if you had loads of egg cups just on the wall.
Nailing egg cups to the wall.
You'll walk in like, well, Nick's lost it.
Something's gone
horribly. Oh, it's so beautiful.
Something's gone horribly wrong there.
But it's beautiful. It's an inky blue. Oh, it's lovely. It's very nice.
It's getting there.
Yeah, we're nicely settled in. Well, I say we. Yeah. Well, I feel like I've lived here. I've just been moving stuff around.
This is true.
How are you, Nick?
I'm all right. Tired, knackered, painty, stuff going on, boxes. Ooh.
Just boxes everywhere.
Boxes
watch you at night.
Oh, they really do.
Oh, you're tired for Christmas.
Tired, I know. Christmas, and Christmas is tomorrow.
Yeah, you got your family thing tomorrow.
Big family Christmas this weekend, and it's like, there's lots to do, and I've still got to do shopping.
Oh no.
And I've got deliveries coming tomorrow, and I need to go shopping, and it's like, there's not enough time.
There's not enough time at Christmas time.
But it'll get there, and all shall be well.
All shall be well. By this time next week, you'll just be permanently drunk.
Oh, this time next week, when this comes out actual Christmas, I'll be great. I've got a nice 5 days off. Mm. I should be bumbling around, arranging my books, building some Lego, drinking a case of fizz.
That sounds perfect.
Yeah, can't
perfect
wait.
Christmas.
Going to be grand.
All of us will be very, very jealous, messaging you, going, what you doing?
I'm having fun without you. Go away.
Don't look at me in my flat.
It's my time.
Well, any poisonings this week?
No, I've been too busy.
No, too busy. Yep, not, your dance card is full.
The box monster.
What?
I don't know where that came from. It's a lot of boxes.
That's something I feel you should poison. A box monster.
Box monster.
That you've just allowed to live in the house. I don't have time to deal with you.
I think allowed is a strong way of putting it.
What does the box monster do?
I don't know. Just grumbles and says, I'm a box. And I go, that's a fucking, it's another fucking box. And they just replicate, I'm sure. It's like, I come into a room and there's no boxes. I leave the room and come back, there's 12 boxes. And it's like, where are the boxes coming from?
Oh, they're breeders. Yeah. Oh, interesting.
Very annoying.
Oh, I like it. Like gremlins, you put water on them. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, it's not good.
Well, speaking of the box monster and why you should fear it with your lives,
absolutely.
I think it is time for us to thank our delicious Patreon subscribers.
Yes, indeed. They're all boxes. I don't know where that came from, but thank you very much to everyone who has joined us over the past 400 years of doing this show. You've all been bloody marvelous, and we could have done it without you.
Patreons really do support and make this show happen, and everyone on there is a delight. It's a beautiful community supporting us doing even more episodes every single week. That's what we do on Patreon, and we put out more bonus content. We have chats, we have live book clubs. So thank you from the bottom of our hearts to the beautiful, beautiful Patreons out there. And also a big thank you to all of our listeners who are not at this time Patreon subscribers. It's flexible. We love you. We appreciate you. You're wonderful, wonderful people.
Wonderful.
Well, Nick, are you ready?
Possibly.
To drink cocktails and talk about poison.
Is this a box monster impression? Is this what you think a box monster sounds like? Because you're way off.
What does a box monster sound? Hello, it's Jamie Bailey.
I think it's probably
monster.
Different to every person.
I'm a box monster. Or different voice for the box monster. Or to drink poison and talk about cocktails.
Whichever one makes you leave, because they're both really scary.
Well, it's a monster. It's supposed to be scary. Should we go with the first one?
Yeah, whatever that one was, yes.
Hooray,
let's do that.
Hooray, hooray. Yes, it is Nick's story this week, and we can't possibly have a story without a cocktail in hand. As you know, dear listeners, every week we choose a secret ingredient that is inspired by the tale that we tell, and it will flavour our cocktail of the week. Nick, your secret ingredient is...
It's fire!
Fire! Fire. Da, da, da,
which I was
da,
amazed
da,
we've not
da.
Done before. I was convinced we had. And I went through the list. And we've done a bonfire before.
Oh, a bonfire.
But not just good old-fashioned fire.
But good old-fashioned fire, because bonfire is very specific.
Very specific thing. Very specific thing.
Yeah. But fire.
Absolutely.
Fire.
Yes.
Cleanses.
Well, that it does.
Lovely. And there's so much we could do with that. So there's smoke and there's embers and there's wood and whatever else makes fire.
Yes. Orange.
If you make a cocktail... And orange is the predominant ingredient. I think my respect level will go down and then go up massively for you.
I wish I had now. I really wish I had.
It's got orange in it.
Just the colour. Not the fruit. It's just the colour. It's just a concentrated orange. A lump of pure green.
That has to be an ingredient at one point. Maybe that's Christmas.
Maybe.
A lump of purest green.
Imagine all the chartreuse cocktails.
Yeah. Before we did this episode... Nick suggested that you could put chartreuse in hot chocolate, and I nearly left. It really was a sticking point. I was like, no.
I think it'll be tasty.
I don't want to talk about this anymore.
Okay,
it was traumatising to me, and I've only just got over it.
And you bring it up again.
I know, because it haunts me. Give it to the box monster, see if it quells him. Well, with fire as your ingredient, are we having an orange?
We're not having just an orange.
Just an orange being thrown. There you go. Make your own cocktail.
We're not. As much as I wish I had done that, we're not having that.
What are we having?
We are having a fireman's sour.
Oh, okay. That's weird sounding. Fireman's sour. I don't know.
Fireman's sour.
I love a sour, but a fireman's sour?
A fireman's sour.
I don't think I've ever heard of a sour that's not like a whiskey sour or a Disaronno sour that's not just named the liquor and then sour.
Fireman sour.
Fire.
Compressed fireman. Juiced fireman.
I kept thinking like Fireman Sam, but pissed. That After Dark special.
Just he's just really, really bitter and angry.
Been on this job too damn long. He's got PTSD and he's just in his therapist's office drinking heavily.
He's a sour man.
Yeah, screw Fireman Sam. Okay, good. I'm excited to see what will happen.
So
really.
As am I. Yeah, as am I. Can it live up to the hype now?
Well, I think it is high time for us to skip into the new Poisonous Cabinet Kitchen and shake up a storm. So we'll see you in a minute.
We'll see you in a bit.
And we're back.
Hello.
Well, Nick, we have the Fireman Sour.
The Fireman Sour.
It looks weird.
It looks weird.
Well, it's got a foamy head.
It's got a foamy head.
But it's all kind of pink.
Like Fireman.
What?
I don't know.
Oh, they do use foam.
Well, exactly.
Right, but not on their heads.
Not on their heads.
Famously, they're not allowed to do that and put it on their heads and go, ha ha ha, look at me.
Famously.
They kind of get yelled at for using up their supplies. Anyway, so like a fireman, it has a foamy head.
Yeah.
But it's pink. Is it pink?
It's pink. It's a pinky ready sort of thing.
It's a pinky ready. This is quite nice this week. Well, almost, because of the last few weeks, months, let's face it, where the poisonous cabinet has been stored in my house. I tend to know sort of half of what's in the drink, because Nick just goes, have we got any of this? Have we got that? Make sure there's plenty of that, but also forget everything I just said.
Yeah, pretty much.
This week, you have access to the full cabinet, and I don't know what's in it, except that I know that there's eggs in this, because you said bring eggs.
Yes,
eggs,
bring
egg white.
It. Yeah.
So there's egg white in this.
There's an egg white.
And you needed limes. Maybe you just wanted limes in the house.
I just like a lime.
You just like having a lime.
Yeah,
like go to bed with
a lime
in your hand.
Evening, so.
Just like to know they're closed.
Exactly. Yeah.
Soothing.
It's a comfort thing.
Do they ward off the box monster? It's the only thing that repels them. Jesus.
Yes, it's a sprinkle lime juice because they don't come into the bedroom.
Yeah. Some people have wolfsbane against vampires. You have lime juice.
Salt or something to keep away witches.
Well, I mean, think about it. There'd be lime juice.
It's logical.
It's gonna make the cardboard disintegrate.
Yeah, let's go with that.
I hope someone's writing this down. This is the stuff great novels are made of. Anyway, but Pinky, Foamy, Heady, I think we should dive in.
Let's give it a go.
All right, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
To the new cabinet. It's a sour.
Yeah.
It's pleasant.
It's perfectly fine.
It's perfectly fine.
It's not exciting.
It doesn't have a big aftertaste. Sour, sharp. Not getting a lot of flavour.
I'm a bit slightly disappointed with that one.
Yeah.
I was hoping for a bit more.
I mean, I will drink it because it's a...
Oh, yeah.
A sour is always quite pleasant to drink. But
so it's not unpleasant, but I was hoping it might be a bit more...
Punchy.
Something going on, yeah.
Well, what could the bread be? Is there a specific...
There is a specific redness? Red thing.
Is it a syrup?
It is.
Oh, is it? Raspberry?
No.
Thought I had you there. A grenadine?
Grenadine.
Hey.
Yes.
Okay, so grenadine... Lime? Is there lime in it?
There's grenadine lime. It's incredibly simple, this one. Possibly too simple.
I played it safe.
I played it safe and I regret it.
Did you? Right, okay. Well, I honestly don't know what else is in this. I could guess at anything because I'm not really getting many other flavours.
Rum.
Oh, I never guess rum. I bloody never guess
basically,
rum.
Basically, like, it's a daiquiri sour.
Oh, all right.
Because you've got rum, lime... Uh-huh. And sweetness and sugar from the grenadine. With an egg white.
Oh, okay.
So it's basically, yeah, it is a daiquiri sour. I'm not loving it. It's perfectly fine. I should have been more adventurous.
Well, I mean, how could you have been more adventurous?
Well, a different cocktail. There are many, many fire-based cocktails out there.
Yes.
So, yeah.
A lot of people were very hopeful that you would be using Fireball whiskey.
Yes.
And I feel like you will never do that in your life.
I think it's probably very unlikely that will ever happen.
It's not only the amount of mentions, the amount of gifts that were sent of Fireball.
I've never had it, I must admit.
I don't think I've ever had it. It's very much an American thing, I think, unless I'm wrong. I mean, I'm sure we can get it over here.
Oh, I'm sure, yes, absolutely. I'm sure it's available.
It's much more of a... Isn't that a...
I don't
know. Okay, I'm going to show my ignorance here. So Fireball whiskey's got cinnamon in it, hasn't it?
I believe so, yes.
So that gives it the spice. Is a Boilermaker...
Oh, I don't know.
...with a Fireball shot of whiskey? So a Boilermaker's usually a beer and a shot of whiskey. I could be lying here. But is it the Fireball?
I could not... Let us know, people.
Yes, let us know,
because this is where my cocktail ignorance is... complete, but I have no idea.
I mean, cocktail is just a shot of cinnamony whiskey. Do people like it? Do people enjoy Fireball? I have a very good memory of a girl. There was a video that went viral of her dad who was decorating his basement and he'd been drinking. And he called her down and says, I'm going to make a how-to video on how to decorate the basement. And it was just him drunk and then dancing to get more Fireball whiskey from the freezer.
Okay. Well, why haven't we got that? Sounds great.
I know. It sounds fun. Yeah. Everybody has it.
Yeah. Sounds like we're missing a trick. Right. Next week, don't care what the ingredient is, we're having a bottle of Fireball whiskey. Going to be our Christmas episode. Nick and Sinead drinking a bottle of whiskey.
I mean, that's pretty much what people want. We need to do something fun for the Christmas episode. So... A sour daiquiri sounds good on paper.
Yeah.
But it's a bit disappointing.
It is a bit disappointing.
Really.
It's a bit nothingy. Just to clarify for people who aren't too sure, generally cocktail sours have an egg white. So if you see anything sour on a menu, it's going to have egg white. It's going to have that sort of foamy, very smooth, silky sort of texture to it. And that's what your classic sort of sour cocktail is. And yeah, you have whiskey sours and Serrano sours and... a billion umpteen types of sours. But if you're not a fan of an egg white, keep away from your sours.
There are vegan versions of it to give you the
aquafaba.
Mouthfeel. Well, I think that actually works, to be honest. It gives you the mouthfeel because you're not tasting the egg.
No, indeed not.
No, I mean, unless you're into that sort of thing. You have a fried egg on the side. I really like a whiskey sour. And I like a Di Serrano sour as well.
Yeah, there's some very good ones. It's classic for a reason.
But yeah,
this
need
is not one of them.
A bolder liquor. Maybe if you'd use dark, what kind of rum did you use?
The recipe actually called for a white rum, which I didn't have. So I've used a 3-year-old
sort
of rum.
So maybe you'd use a dark
flavor,
rum.
Maybe something a bit darker. Maybe something like spiced rum, potentially. You might have a bit of warmth to it. Might be an interesting sort of
thing. Oh, maybe we'll whip that up at the
thing.
Break.
Yeah.
You've got a spare egg. We'll see what
I've
happens.
Got a spare egg.
Very nice. Well, with the Fireman's Sour. I don't know why it's called a Fireman's Sour.
Oh, I think it's red.
That's rubbish.
I think that's probably the only reason. I can't think of any other reason why.
As we've established, orange.
Orange.
Is the colour. Oh, I suppose a fire truck's red, isn't it?
And the fire truck's red as well. Then.
Well, with the Fireman's Sour.
Yes.
In hand, we'll drink it. Is it time for a story?
It most certainly is time for a story.
Yay!
Absolutely. Now, I was quite intrigued. So when we put this ingredient out, a lot of people came back with a story I'd never heard of. actually, which is not the one we're telling today, but I thought it was quite interesting. That a number of people mentioned there was a garment fire, factory fire, in the early 1900s
in
New York and things, which apparently killed, it's like the worst sort of industrial sort of factory disaster. So it's not that. I did look into that one. I don't think there's any foul play suspected in that one. It was a dreadful, horrible thing.
But also a lot of people mentioned the Great Fire of London.
Yes.
Which I'd love to do as a story, but again...
Again,
foul play,
more accidental bakery.
Bakery related.
Yeah,
well,
bakery related. We could do cake. Okay, do it then, because we can have some cake.
Well... If people feel like Great Fire of London is acceptable, maybe for Christmas episode, write in what all the crimes that happened.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's interesting you say, these things have were not sort of crime related. It's entirely possible that today's episode is not crime related at all.
What are we doing, Nick?
Well, the thing is, we don't know. So today we're going to have, it's a very sad story, I have to say. I'm going to say this now. It's a very sad story. It is quite a heartbreaking story of the Sodder family.
Oh, okay.
Are you familiar with the Sodder family?
I do not know the story at all. It's a name that is mentioned. I do not know a thing about it.
Yeah, so I mean, it's a story that has been described as either an awful tragedy, a great mystery. But we, as I say, we really don't know if there is even a crime to answer for. But it is certainly a tale worth telling.
Okay.
So that is what we're going to do today. So we'll start with George Sodder. Now, George was born Giorgio Sodu in Sardinia. In Italy, in 1895. He immigrates to the United States at the age of 13 with his older brother.
Nice.
His brother doesn't really like it. He ends up returning to Italy. But George Sodder, as he becomes known, sort of an Americanized version of his name, he sticks it out.
Nice.
He finds work on the railroads in Pennsylvania. He starts off with really pretty low-level stuff. He's sort of delivering water and supplies to other labourers and things like that.
Okay, right.
So, but
he's the labourer's bitch.
Yeah, pretty much. But he works incredibly hard. And within a few years, he's become a driver. He's driving trucks around. And a few years after that, he actually ends up owning his own trucking company.
Okay, that's
yeah.
Quite
so
good.
He's absolutely the American dream, indeed. So he arrives and he works hard,
starts his own business,
and hugely successful. But he ends up, say, running this trucking company that is hauling coal around West Virginia. At some point during his life there, he meets up with Jenny Cipriani. Now she is the daughter of another Italian immigrant, and the pair fall in love and they marry. Now they move into quite a nice, large two-story house on the outskirts of Fayetteville in West Virginia.
Ah, yes.
Now the town itself, no, I have no idea where it is, but it sounds lovely. The
West Virginia, lovely, yeah. Lovely.
The town has quite a large Italian expat community to it, so it seems like the perfect place for them to settle and to start a family. And they really do start a family.
That does sound like you were building up to them to start shagging.
They start shagging continuously.
How many?
In 1923, George has...
I was going to say 19 children.
Yes, yeah, so they have 1,923 children.
Shooting them out, they were. That's how babies are born.
In 1923, they have their first of 10 children.
Good going.
They have. So they're good going, absolutely. The last one, a daughter named Sylvia, is born in 1942. So over the span of sort of 19 years, they have 10 kids. Okay. George's business prospers and the Sodder family grows and grows and grows. And they become one of the most respected families in the area, really. Absolutely. They
good
are well
them.
Established indeed. George has this reputation. He is a hardworking, no-nonsense sort of chap. He has strong opinions about many, many things, whether you wanted to hear them or not. he will tell you his opinion. He is not shy about expressing himself.
I want to meet the businessmen, the successful businessmen, but who were fine with nonsense.
Absolutely.
When people say they're no nonsense people, who is tolerating nonsense?
Oh, I tolerate a lot of nonsense.
Okay, we'll just let it go.
So.
No, that's bollocks. You're talking bollocks, I tell you. I don't care about your weekend.
One of his subjects that he is most passionate about is his strident dislike and opposition to Mussolini, who has just taken power in Italy.
Fair play.
At this point, he's firmly anti-fascist, which goes against a number of quite a large part of the community, in Fayetteville, and it leads to some very heated arguments
with
other members there who are very pro Mussolini's reforms and things.
And
obviously it was very popular.
Yeah.
So yeah, but George was very much no. And yeah, he made himself a few enemies with his political beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
So now we're going to move forward slightly to 1945.
Okay.
So the family have had a lovely Christmas Eve. So it's the 24th of December.
Aww.
George and Jeannie, they have celebrated with 9 of their children. Joe, who's the second oldest, he is in the army and he's been deployed abroad. But they've got 9 of the other kids with them.
Nice. Okay. And this image that one of them was just out on the porch going, we don't like you.
We just don't like him.
At Christmas, they're like, he was can in... we come in for a crumb? No.
No, he was in the barn.
You've disappointed us greatly.
So we've got John, who's 22, who works with his father. Joe, 21, who's in the army. Mm-hmm. We've got Marion, who's 19. She's the oldest daughter. Then we've got George Jr., 16, Maurice, 14, Martha, who's 12, Louis, who's 9, another Jenny, who's 8, Betty, 5, and then finally 2-year-old Sylvia.
Nice.
All having a jolly, lovely Christmas time.
That's a lovely Christmas.
It's a lovely, mad, hectic Christmas, I'm sure.
Yeah, mad and hectic, but you kind of go, oh, this is why we do it, isn't it? Yeah, snug, warm by the fire.
Exactly.
Having your cocoa.
Yeah. Now, Marion, say the oldest daughter, she works at a store in town and she's bought gifts for her younger siblings and things. God. And they're all having a lovely time at Christmas. They're allowed to stay up a bit later than their normal bedtime. It's Christmas. Go on, play with your new toys.
Aww.
Have a lovely time. As long as your chores are done, you can stay up past your bedtime.
Fair enough.
At around 10 p.m., Jenny, she goes off to bed. She leaves Marion and the kids up.
Yep.
They'll sort themselves out.
Okay.
At around 12:30 in the morning, the telephone rings, waking Jenny. She goes downstairs to answer the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
The caller is a woman whose voice she doesn't recognise. There's the sound of laughter and sort of clinking glassware and chatter in the background. And this unknown woman asks for a name that Jenny is not familiar with. She tells the caller, I have no idea who you're talking about. You reached the wrong number. Fine. She later recalls the woman had a very peculiar weird laugh when she said you got the wrong number. That she gave us a really weird odd laugh and then hung up.
Oh, that's not the phone,
which was a bit disturbing. So Jenny's like, that was a bit weird, but she said, okay, fine, yeah, wrong number, whatever. As she's going back to bed, she notices that in the sort of the front room, the lights are still on, the curtains haven't been drawn as the kids would normally do before they go to bed. She goes to have a look. She finds Marion passed out on the sofa.
Okay.
None of the other kids are there. She assumes, oh, they must have all just gone to bed. Left their big sister on the sofa. So
hammered on Baileys.
hammered on Baileys. Knackered from playing with the little ones. Jenny draws the curtains, turns the lights off, leaves Marion to sleep on the sofa and goes back to bed.
Uh-huh.
She's woken again at 1 a.m.
What?
And she hears something hit the roof. Something hits the roof and then sort of rolls off.
Santa?
Potentially Santa. She doesn't.
It's the night before Christmas.
Yeah, she listens for a while. She doesn't hear anything else. She drifts back off to sleep again.
Okay.
Half an hour later, she wakes up again.
Okay.
But this time it's to the smell of smoke.
Shut up. No. Ooh.
She wakes her husband, George, who's snoring his head off next to her. They open the bedroom door to find the hallway full of smoke and the stairs leading up to the other bedrooms full of flames.
Jesus.
The fire appears to have started in George's office downstairs, but it is quickly spreading. Jenny and George, they shout for their children to get them out of the house. John, George Jr., Marion and Sylvia, they all make it out to safety outside. However, Maurice, Louis, Martha, Jenny and Betty, they are nowhere to be seen. These younger children, they share bedrooms up on the top floor of the house. Despite George's best efforts, the flames are too severe for him to reach the top floor. He is unable to get inside, so he races round to the side of the house where he knows they keep a long ladder to access the roof and things. So he's all right, I get the ladder, get it up to our window. The ladder's not there.
What?
The ladder is always there. That's where the ladder lives. The ladder is gone. It is missing. He runs to one of his trucks that is parked nearby. He thinks, well, if I get the truck up to the side of the building, I can get on top of the truck, blah, blah, blah. The truck won't start.
What?
He goes to a second truck. The truck won't start.
Oh, this is not good.
He is now desperate to get up to his children, of course.
Very distressing.
It's not a particularly happy story. Mm. He manages to scale the wall, sort of barefoot, sort of climbing up the side of the building, and he reaches the attic window. He smashes the attic window, cuts his arm badly on the broken glass, and he's calling out for his children. There is no answer. There's no noise at all from inside. And the blood on his arm causes him to fall back He sort of loses his grip and he falls back to the ground again. One last ditch attempt. He tries to scoop water out of a rain barrel to try and douse some of the flames, but the water is frozen solid in the barrel, so he has no luck. By this time, the house is engulfed in flame, really. George, Jenny, and the four children who have got out can only watch it as it burns to the ground, presumably with the other children still inside. Within hours, there is nothing left. There is charred timbers, rubble, and a bit of the basement. That is all that is left of the Sodder family home.
Christ.
Yeah, so yeah, it's not a happy situation.
No, did not know this story. This is horrible.
This is horrible.
I require more alcohol to get through this, clearly.
While all this has been going on, Marion she's run to one of the neighbours to try and call the Fayetteville Fire Department to try and get through, get someone out here. She gets no response. The neighbour tries to call, there's no response. Another neighbour who has seen the flames and the smokes also tries to call, but again, cannot get through. No one is responding. The neighbour eventually, he drives into town to track down the fire chief, a chap called F.J. Morris.
Yeah.
Though the fire station is only 2.5 miles away from the Sodder family house, it takes them 7 hours to get to the scene. The crew don't arrive till 8 o'clock in the morning.
What?
Chief Morris, he later comes out with this explanation, this excuse that, well, that the fire department is now woefully undermanned. A lot of the firefighters have been called away, have been conscripted, have been called away. So there's very little.
Right, 95.
So there are very, very few people there. It doesn't help that the chief himself cannot drive the fire truck. So he has to wait for one of the other men to come in to drive the fire truck to the site.
Were any of these people actually firemen? Or was it Christmas Day and they were all just eating turkey and going, at midnight.
Knackered
up. Pissed.
Yeah, pissed, hangover, sleeping, snoring their heads
Christmas
off.
Christmas Eve, all been out singing and dancing, carousing, and then it's like, get out here, like, oh, someone else will go. Mm. If they are volunteers as well, like, at that time.
Yeah. Eventually, they arrive and they find this sort of smouldering ruin with the surviving Sodder family desperately searching for any sign of the missing children.
Yeah, they're all going, thank God you arrived. Well,
thank God you arrived. 8 hours after the fire started. Thank you so much. The police and the firemen conduct a quick investigation on site by 10 o'clock. So they've never been there 2 hours. 2 hours is enough time for a thorough investigation into these things. Chief Morris informs George and Jenny that the fire had been caused by faulty wiring. He also goes on to say that they had found no trace whatsoever of the children in the ruins.
What?
There's no evidence of,
there's no remains.
Of bodies, there's no remains or anything like that. He is entirely convinced that the fire has burned hot enough to completely cremate, dispose of any human remains whatsoever in there.
Okay.
Which, of course, George and Jenny take it completely at face value. Why would he lie about such a thing? So absolutely, they're convinced their family have just been entirely consumed by flames. A coroner convenes an inquest for the very next day. Mm. And he determines that, yes, absolutely, there's no human remains were found. The five children, they must have perished in the fire. The only explanation was that they perished in the fire. Again, the chief gets up again and says, yes, the fire burned hot enough that they completely cremated the bodies.
But the fire chief has arrived 8 hours later.
Mm-hmm.
And based on just assumptions?
Based on a quick cursory, we can't find anything.
I guess.
We can't find any obvious remains. Therefore, the only explanation is that they must have been completely burned.
I mean, it's possible. It happens.
The fire burned for a couple of hours. It was very intense, but the fire only burned until the building was consumed, and then it was just smouldery. But that is what the coroner chooses to accept, this sort of explanation, and he issues the death certificates to that, attributing the cause of death to fire or suffocation of these five missing children. The funeral for the five Sodder children takes place on the 2nd of January, 1946. George and Jenny are far too grief-stricken to attend, to do anything. They leave their five remaining children to attend to things, to organise things, while they sit in their own grief.
Wow.
As time passes, the family begins to try and rebuild their lives, and grief starts to fade. George and Jenny start to question the official findings about the fire. This is the official explanation they have been given. The fire chief had told George to leave the site of the fire undisturbed. They might at some point in the future be able to get some specialists down from somewhere to carry out another investigation. Just leave it as it is. And if we can, we'll get someone out to have a look. But we don't know when that'll be.
Yeah, we don't know that.
We don't know when that'll be.
You tampering with it is the big problem. The elements, fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fine.
George and Jenny, they cannot bear to look at this. Mm. What was their home and what they think is the grave of their children. So George bulldozes the land and he covers it over in a big old pile of earth. And they create a memorial garden on the site to their lost children. And Jenny tends the garden for the rest of her life. But as I say, as they start reviewing the official records, they find that they disagree with many of the findings that were presented. There seem to be far too many unanswered questions and unusual circumstances that had occurred either before or during the fire. And they want answers. They want to know exactly what happened to their family, to their children. They wondered why, if the blaze had been caused by electrical problems, the family's Christmas lights had remained on for a long time as the fire was still going. They both distinctly remembered, as they were searching and calling for their children, the Christmas lights were still on. If electrical fault had been caused, surely the lights would have gone out and the whole house would have been in darkness apart from the flames. But no, they all very clearly remember the electricity was still there. George also remembers an odd encounter he had happened a couple of months beforehand, back in October 1945, when a stranger had appeared at the home asking for work with one of George's companies. The men had walked around the gardens as they chatted. When the chap pointed to one of the fuse boxes on the side of the wall and from the back of nowhere says, "This is going to cause a fire someday."
Oh.
George thought this is a strange comment to make, especially as the wiring had only just the week previously been inspected by the power company.
Yeah.
And they said, "Nope, spot on. Your wiring's grand."
Ah.
Big seal of certificate of, yep, sorted. But now someone's here going, "Well, that looks dodgy."
Someone's walking around the scene very much going, "Oh, that might cause
you a fire at some point in the future.
I wouldn't know anything about that, though."
That same month, a life insurance salesman had been visiting the house trying to sell the family a policy. Now, George was having none of it and this chap was rebuffed, but this salesman became completely irate and warned George that his house would go up in smoke.
What?
He says, "Your house will go up in smoke and your children will be destroyed."
Jesus. Wow.
Which
okay, that's
seems,
a hard sell.
Seems quite quite over the top.
I don't know. Have you ever met an insurance salesman?
Well, they are quite pushy.
Yeah, it's so, like they come into your house, "Oh, this is an entire death trap."
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. "I'm surprised you're alive right now.
Yeah,
have this policy.
If you don't get this policy, then your children will be entirely destroyed."
Yeah, that's how they sell.
Yeah. But also the salesman is tracked down as well. And it said that he has made the comments due to the dirty remarks George had been making about Mussolini. So apparently, obviously, this insurance salesman was a fervent fascist and believer in Benito's policies,
right,
and had taken umbrage with George's vocal opposition.
Oh,
and so made these comments about,
"Oh,
yes,
your
house will burn down and your family will be destroyed because you don't like the fascist government
of
Italy."
Is that it?
So
right.
Calm.
Okay,
yeah.
Good insurance salesman then. Yeah.
Good insurance salesman indeed. Then there's the question of the missing ladder. The ladder had stood by the side of the house for years and years and years. It rarely moved, and when it did, that's where it lived. They find the ladder at the bottom of an embankment about 100 feet away, just lying on the ground. Mm. There is no explanation about who moved it, when it was moved, how it got there. No one knows.
Yeah.
A telephone repairman told the Sodders that the house's phone line had not been burnt through, as people had suspected, but had been cut. The phone line had been cut.
Ooh.
Now, not only was this by someone who was willing to climb a 14-foot pole and reach out on top of the pole, reach out about 3 foot to get to where it had been cut. So someone who was quite confident at doing this and probably had skills in these sort of things.
Or they had very long secateurs.
Or very, very, very long secateurs.
Shears, if you will.
Absolutely. But yeah, the phone line had been cut. A man who had been discovered stealing a block and tackle, a pulley set, from a neighbour's property at around about the same time that the fire had started, was identified and arrested. He admitted to the theft and claimed that he had been the one who cut the phone line.
Okay.
He had cut the phone line. He thought it was a power line, he's saying, but he cut it, got the wrong line. He denies having anything to do with the fire whatsoever. But there is no record of who the suspect was, what his name was, where he came from, why he would wanted to have cut any utility lines to the Sodder house
is
entirely unexplained.
Right, so they just, we know that someone cut, that someone said that they someone, cut the line.
Someone said that, yeah, I cut the line. I committed a burglary. But no I one cut wrote down the his line. Name. No one, apparently, all the records have been lost. In Yeah, must they must have done at some point. The records have vanished since. No one knows why the man felt necessary to cut the line, not even to the house that he was burgling. Perhaps he was just a very incompetent burglar, potentially. Got the wrong line or something. It could be something like that. Jenny also has trouble accepting Chief Morris's belief that all traces of the children's body had been burned completely in the fire. There had been plenty of other identifiable items, sort of bits of furniture, household appliances and stuff like that, that could be identified in the wreckage, but not a single piece of bone or clothing, anything or but a clothing, shoe leather, yeah. anything like that. There was nothing. She found a newspaper account of a similar house fire that had killed a family of seven. Skeletal remains of all those victims were reported to have been found in that case. So why is there no trace of her children? She goes on, she carries out an experiment by trying to burn small parts of animal bones.
Oh, Jesus.
She gets like chicken bones and pig bones and things and tries to burn them, and she's completely unsuccessful. No matter how much gasoline and wood and stuff, she cannot recreate temperatures hot enough to completely get rid of bone.
And that's the thing, is that you would think, I don't know, I mean, I'm not an expert on such things, but God, one body maybe, but there's what, five of them have no trace whatsoever. Absolutely zero trace of them in a fire that has burned for only 2 hours.
Only a couple of hours, absolutely. I mean, she goes as far as she consults a crematorium worker from the next town over, and they tell her that you'll find bits of human bone even after a cremation. When bodies are burned at 1,000 degrees for 2 hours in a crematorium, you still get little bits and pieces that are left over. That is far hotter and far longer than the house fire would have burned. So she's absolutely convinced that something is really weird here. Some accounts have also suggested that the wrong number phone call was somehow a are they home, are they not home, are they up sort of investigative sort of call sort of thing. The woman who made the call was eventually tracked down, and she said, oh no, it was a wrong number. We were a bit pissed at Christmas Eve,
so
we called the wrong number, and that seems to have been accepted, that yes, that was just a wrong number call.
Oh, I don't know, just I find very, that very suspicious,
very bizarrely coincidental that was there.
I just have a weird laugh,
yeah,
she was saying to everyone, like,
she was a bit pissed at having a toast and trying to find someone on who hadn't arrived at their party.
God, bad timing then.
Yeah. Both George and Jenny were convinced that the children were not dead. They were absolutely convinced that they had been kidnapped and the fire had been set deliberately. The surviving children remembered a strange car that had been seen for a number of days before the fire. The occupants seemed to be watching the younger children as they went to and from school and things like that. They seemed to be under observation. They remember this car. George suspected that it may have been the mafia, the Sicilian mafia, who had been responsible in retaliation for his political fervour and his outspoken beliefs against Mussolini, thinking, okay, this is a retribution.
I mean, it seems a lot.
But, yeah, to kidnap five children and burn a house down.
It does, you know. They've done worse.
Well, absolutely.
Successful businessman, yeah. This has a lot of money, a lot of sway, a lot of influence.
Exactly. This is someone who people listen to in the community. Mm. And yeah, as you say, has got a lot of clout and a lot of influence.
But we may come on to this, but you would understand if they just set the house on fire. Mm. And just when who dies, dies.
Yeah.
And there you go. But why would they kidnap five children? Like, you know, unless they're going to hold them to ransom. That's a lot of admin.
Yeah. And there was no sort of after George saying, yeah, having received a ransom or him saying, I've been told to shut up or something will happen to my children.
Yeah. There's it nothing. Seems like you would use that as a mean to an end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. There was a bus driver who passed through Fayetteville late on that Christmas Eve. And he said that he had seen some people throwing what he described as balls of fire.
Okay.
At the Sodder house.
Right.
Giving George more thought that, okay, this fire hadn't been the result of an electrical wiring issue.
Someone
had been chucking something at the house to set it on fire. A few months later, the Sylvia, the youngest one, she found a small hard green ball-like object in the grounds of the house. George remembered his wife's comments about something hitting the roof and then rolling off. Mm. And George became convinced that this whatever it was looked like a pineapple bomb, like a grenade, an incendiary device that someone had perhaps chucked at the house trying to set them on fire. A couple of witnesses came forward who even claimed to have seen the children after the fire.
Ooh.
One woman who witnessed the fire from the other side, from the roadside, said she had seen children being driven away in a car. Said she had seen a group of children. What she came forward and what was said.
Right. I saw children being driven away. Right. Were there details? There was a car and children.
There was a car and children.
I saw it.
Oh, I saw it. They were being kidnapped. They were.
Yep, you're shit stirring troublemaker. That's what you are.
Another woman who worked at a rest stop between Fayetteville and Charleston said she had served the children breakfast the following day and remembered a car with Florida license plates in the parking lot. In 1947, George tried to interest the FBI in the investigation. Obviously, the local police were convinced it was just, no, they're dead. Yeah. They're not there. Stop causing trouble.
Yeah.
So he gets hold of the FBI. So George, he writes to director J. Edgar Hoover to try and get them interested. Hoover actually responds, writing, "Although I would like to be of service, the matter related appears to be of local character and does not come within the investigative jurisdiction of the Bureau."
Mm.
He did add that if local authorities were requested the Bureau's assistance, he would send agents down to investigate. The Fayetteville police, not that keen on asking the FBI
to come in
and take a look at something they're convinced is nothing.
Or that they may have fucked up.
That's very true. Or that they may have fucked up. I think that may be time for a wee drinky break.
Oh, it is.
Before we continue with the crazy case.
I don't like this. Let's get more drinks.
More drinks.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Nick, we have our drinks.
We have our drinks.
We shake.
it's
a really good story.
It's good. Like, it's interesting, but it's not happy.
Again, I'm not saying a lot because I'm just like,
what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, what's going on? It does seem like a tragedy at this point. It seems like an awful tragedy, and that someone has attacked the house.
Mm.
They've made enemies somewhere. But yes, I do find it bizarre that there's no trace. And I'm sure one of our listeners could come through and say, listen, this can happen. This can happen, that there is absolutely no trace nothing. Of a body whatsoever, and they're younger children, yeah. I guess. So I don't know if that makes any difference. They're smaller.
I suppose it's less dense, thinner bones, maybe. Does that make a difference? Is it easier to? Yeah, I don't know.
That's a good point.
That's a complete guess.
But yeah, there's a lot of strange circumstances around it. At the moment, it seems like it's a tragic house fire. But there's still questions and queries.
Yeah, exactly. It's the questions and queries that keep it in people's minds. And there are so many unanswered questions that they go down to the route, they hire a private investigator.
Go for it.
To have a look. So a chap called C.C. Tinsley.
What? Sorry. Was he in real demand over Christmas?
C.C. Tinsley.
C.C. Tinsley. Hello, could you please find out where Santa is? Okay, this is the last time I'm going to tell you. I'm not doing these cases anymore. I'm a serious private investigator.
I'm a serious, serious man.
Now give me some eggnog.
So Tinsley.
Tinsley.
He learns that the insurance salesman who had made the threats to George of your house will burn down, your children will be destroyed, he had been on the coroner's jury who had declared the fire an accident.
What?
Which seemed a bizarre, odd coincidence. Which is like,
don't you need to vet these people?
Where are we? A local insurance salesman. A member of the community.
Oh my God.
Yeah, apparently he was on the jury who declared the whole thing an accident.
Was he doing the finger pyramid of evil?
Very possibly. Very possibly. He had a big twirly moustache going on. He had a box of fire just next to him.
I'll unleash it. I will. The box monster holds it.
Yeah. He also learns of rumours that have been circulating around Fayetteville that even though the Chief Morris had reported that no remains had been found in the ashes, that he had actually found a heart in the ashes, and he had later packed into a metal box and had buried it. This was the rumour that was going around town. George and Tinsley confront the chief with this.
Yeah.
And the chief agrees to show the two where he has buried this metal box.
Oh, what, he admits it?
Yes.
What?
They dig up the box and they take it to a local funeral director who examines the contents and finds that it contains beef liver. And the beef liver has never been exposed to fire.
What the what? What?
The chief later admits that the box had not come from the fire, unsurprisingly. Uh-huh. But he had placed it there, hoping that the sodders would find it and be satisfied that the missing children had died in the fire.
Right. So
he planted some evidence. Thinking, or if they find this, although how it's in helps if it's in a box, I'm not entirely sure.
But that's exactly what I was going to say, is that the children took out their heart, put it in a box, and went, well, this will be helpful if we survive this.
Yeah.
No, it must be that he planted the evidence in the wreckage and then went back.
But maybe, yep, thinking if they find this, they'll go, fine, okay, there's some remains, then they must be gone. Whether he was trying to do
it
in a compassionate sort of way, thinking this will give them closure, or it was some other Machiavellian sort of scheme.
Has he ever seen a heart?
Again, we don't know. Yeah, how they get a heart and a liver. And a cow's liver mixed up.
Yes, it's beef liver. It's very different from a heart.
Yeah.
He was like, no, they'll never know. They're distraught. Mm. I'm going to lean into that.
But it's something that happened, which is incredibly odd and bizarre and weird.
And also just take the remains, if you've got it, and burn them somewhere else. Because that would burn. Fry it up with some brandy. No, what? Boy, bury... That's a whole level of ridiculous. Of like, I planted evidence, now let me plant it in this metal box and bury it.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to show you. Just deny it ever happened.
It's odd.
That's weird.
In August of 1949, George persuades a chap called Oscar Hunter. Now, he's a pathologist from Washington.
Seeking awards.
He is persuaded to come down to West Virginia and conduct a search and the garden, the remains of what's left there, to go through it a expert, detailed eye. They have a thorough search. It takes them days and days and days to properly go through everything, during which they find several small bone fragments in the remains. They are determined to be human vertebrae.
Okay.
From the spine. Now, the bone fragments are sent to a specialist at the Smithsonian Institution.
Yay.
Very bones. And they are all confirmed to be from the same person, the same individual. Okay. It's also estimated that the victim's age would have been somewhere between 16 and 22 of this person there. The oldest missing child, Maurice Sodder, had been 14 at the time.
Is that just an anomaly, or is that...
It was also determined that the bones had no signs of burning on them at all.
What the fuck?
Who the fuck were these bones from?
Whose bones were these?
No one knows.
So they found those in the garden?
In the garden, the remains of the house that had been bulldozed.
They dug it up. Did he accidentally dig up someone else's bones?
Maybe so.
Well, just like, oh, put some soil in there. And there was just like someone was standing there like, oh shit, I've buried a corpse over there.
Yeah, pretty much exactly that. Was just some soil from a nearby cemetery when they were making the garden. Or was it brought from years and years back going on? Was just dumped there, and then they happened to find these bits of bone that were then identified. But
oh God, the hope that it must have given them going, absolutely. Yeah, this is my child. And they go, oh, okay, it's not the right age.
It's not the right
age.
Not been burned. And they've not been through a fire. Now, all these investigations, it attracts huge media attention, all this. And it causes the state police to sort of take a new look at the case. And they do. Yeah. They reopen the case. They go through George's evidence and the theories and things that he and various private investigators have dug up. But they can't find anything. There's nothing there concrete. By 1950, the governor and the superintendent of the state police told George and Jenny that the case, they actually use the word, is hopeless. They cannot find anything. The FBI then decide it has jurisdiction.
Yay.
It thinks that if it is a kidnapping, it's an across state lines thing. So therefore, they have jurisdiction over this.
They roll into town.
They roll into town. They drop the case after 2 years. They can find nothing new at all. But the Sodders themselves, they don't give up. They offer a $5,000 reward for any information. That is soon doubled to $10,000. Mm-hmm. Then in 1952, they put up a billboard at the site of the house and another alongside Route 60.
Yeah.
As well, with pictures of the missing children and a plea for information. The billboards bring in sightings from all over the country, really. One woman, an Ida Crutchfield, who ran a hotel in Charleston, claims to have seen the children a week after they disappeared. She said the children had come in around midnight with two men and two women who looked Italian.
Oh, God, come on.
She said that
she
had tried to speak with the children, but one of the men had looked at her and given a really hostile stare.
In a very Italian way.
And then had begun talking rapidly in Italian to one of the women.
The group then
left early the following morning. Again, police take her account with, really?
Really, did you? Really, that's very convenient. Do you have any records or information? No.
George follows up numerous leads himself. There's a woman from St. Louis, Missouri, who claims Martha was being held in a convent.
Held in a convent. He'll take to the Lord.
He travels the city, goes to the convent. She's not there.
The convent are like, no, we don't do that.
We don't have your kidnapped daughter here.
We don't kidnap children. No. The priests do other stuff, but never mind.
He also follows up with a man in Texas who claims to have overheard two people making incriminating statements about a fire that had happened on Christmas Eve in West Virginia some years before. He also follows up on a tip from Houston that two of his sons were in Texas. Nope. None of these come to anything. Then in 1968, 23 years after the fire, Jenny receives a letter that has been sent from Central City in Kentucky.
Okay.
Inside is a photograph of a young man. On the back was written, Louis Sodder. I love brother Frankie. Little boys, 890132.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Who knows?
It's bizarre.
It's a bizarre phrase.
Collection of things.
Yes, absolutely. But obviously, Louis Sodder, one of the missing children. And the parents, they are convinced that this is what Louis would look like when he, 23 years later, this is what he would have grown up to be. The authorities think it is a cruel, horrid hoax that has been played.
You'd sort of cling on to any piece of hope.
Well,
there,
absolutely.
You?
George and Jenny say this is their son. They hire another private investigator to go to Central City, go and find out where this has come from, find the man in the photograph, find out who sent the photograph. The investigator leaves West Virginia with his fee and is never heard from again.
This is heartbreaking. It's all, for the parents.
George dies on the 16th of August 1969 at the age of 73. Yes.
Oh, Jesus. It wasn't me.
Yes, a bit before you.
Thank you for clarifying that. Yes. Yeah, it was a bit before.
Jenny and the surviving children, they continue to hunt for answers to their questions. After George's death, Jenny wears black for the rest of her life. She's in mourning for the rest of her life. Yeah. She continues to tend to the garden that they had set up. Jenny herself, she dies on the 15th of February, 1989, at the age of 85. After her death, the family finally take down the weathered billboards that have been lining the roadsides. The youngest child, Sylvia, she died in 2021 at the age of 79. Okay. So if any of her siblings had survived the fire, they would be dead by then. Mm. No one knows for sure what has happened to the five Sodder children. They may well likely have perished in a fire, a tragic house fire in 1945, but with so many unanswered questions, the case remains a genuine unsolved mystery.
Da, da, da.
And there we go.
Wow.
That's a lot going on there.
There is. Oh, God. Yeah, I had no information on the Sodder children, had heard of the case and people mentioning going, oh, it's a thing about children. I was like, oh, okay, we'll look into that. Wow. It does seem to me that it is a tragic accident.
I'm probably inclined to agree that it is something, but there are so many weird little tangents and things. It does make you think that what if something untoward was happening? There's all that little doubt in your mind.
It is, yeah. To go, if it's a tragic accident, exactly what it is that who set the fire? What happened?
Yeah.
Why was their house burned down? Was it because the dad was just talking and spouting off things about Mussolini and annoyed some other people and the jealousy of him being a successful businessman, we've seen it before, burned the house down and some of them got out and some of them didn't. Mm. And if you are going to maliciously set a fire, you'll move the ladder and you'll disable the trucks.
Trucks and things like that. Absolutely.
So it does seem like it's an arson attempt to kill them all. And they luckily woke up, some of them.
Yeah.
The fact that the fire brigade don't come out in time is a bit weird. It does seem like disorganisation.
I think that is probably more disorganisation. A lack of manpower. It's Christmas Eve. Everyone's a bit pissed. It's their skeleton stuff as it is. I don't think there's anything untoward going on there, apart from just disorganisation and unpreparedness.
But the idea that there's no trace of them.
Yeah.
And this is where we need people to weigh in, really, because people, with more experience and more knowledge or have studied this or are, generally work for the fire service or anything like that. As you said, they consulted experts.
Mm.
No trace whatsoever?
No
or
trace.
Was it just sloppily investigated?
Well, there is that. But they then had that subsequent investigation. But a number of years had passed since.
Yeah.
But you would still expect...
You'd find something.
You would find something.
And then why is this guy planting beef liver on the side to kind of get as a heart that wouldn't survive, like a bone would survive.
Yeah, a bit of bone, but a fleshy internal organ. That's one of the first things that's gonna burn up.
Who's doing that? So that's the thing. Was it a malicious attack on the family, and that certain people in the neighbourhood knew about it, or would warn to keep your mouth shut, or just to push it away? The idea that they were kidnapped, to what end? Apart from the
cause anguish. That's the only end I can see. There's no sort of ransom demand or keep your mouth shut or anything like that.
Well, human trafficking.
Well, yes.
Which is a bold attempt to do that.
Absolutely.
But then the youngsters to get them and the human slave trade. It can happen.
That's a dark thought I hadn't had.
Well,
not wrong.
Yeah. Normally it wouldn't be five kids that you'd... would it? I don't know.
Yes, not an expert in such things.
That would be the only reason that I could think of that they wouldn't have a ransom demand. If it was the mafia taking them, they'd be like, well, we're using this as leverage.
Mm.
And then all those sightings is just people...
I think it's, one of their 5 minutes of...
God, yeah. It's so sad. And unfortunately, you can well imagine that the parents would cling to
just
anything.
Just desperate, absolutely.
And if there was the slightest thing that was off, you would go, well, there's maybe some hope that my children are alive.
Mm.
And you probably would cling to that. But yeah, there's enough weird stuff.
There's just enough things that are just a bit off that make you think it's not as cut and dry as it could be.
Given the number of deaths involved, weirdly, this sounds like a horrible thing to say, but if it was one child or two, you could understand that it would be a bit bungled, and maybe the question
five,
you would pull out all that. You would be like, "This is massive.
Yeah.
This is a unbelievable that this happened, and yet it seems so slapdash. Mm. Ooh, shivers, Nick. Well, what do you think, people? What do you think of the mystery of the Sodder children? Do you believe that this was a genuine tragic accident, a maliciously started fire in which the children perished, an electrical fault, faulty wiring? Or do you think the children survived? Do you think the children are elsewhere? Something more untoward was happening. There may be many more theories and ideas about it. Tell us what you think. Jump on the comments of this episode wherever you listen to it. Tell us your thoughts, your theories, your feelings, your musings, your conspiracy theories around it as well. Is there a whole angle we haven't considered, or that we should consider, or we should throw in to make it more cheery? Bigfoot took them. I don't know.
Yes. Something to make it more cheery, please.
Yes. And they're living happily in the woods.
Yes. They had a lovely old time.
Big feet. Juniors.
Bigfoot Juniors.
Yeah, there we are. But while you are musing about what could have happened in this famous case, you should maybe mix up Fireman's Sour.
Yeah, I wouldn't. There are more exciting cocktails out there.
Yeah. It fit perfectly with the story. Fireman. And like the fireman in the story, it was disappointing.
It was disappointing. Yeah. That is absolutely true. Disappointing fireman.
It looked very pretty, and I think we chose not to remake this cocktail. Maybe with spiced rum, as you said, or dark rum.
That could be interesting. That could be worth a try.
It's an easy one to make. So if you are making it over the weekend, we'll put the recipe out this evening, but try a variation on it.
Yes, I agree. Give it a go. Can you improve upon it? Let me know your improvements and we'll mix it up.
And solve the case while you're doing it.
And solve the case while you're doing it.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
If you haven't already, please come and join us on Patreon if you're able. And please consider leaving us a review on Apple iTunes. And anywhere you listen to podcasts, please leave them a nice review if you can. And also send us suggestions of more stories and more content you'd like to hear from us across the festive season or beyond. Especially into 2024. Next week is our Christmas special. We are still taking suggestions of stories we can cover. They don't have to be Christmas related, but they could be pretty big. What do you think? Thanks for listening, guys. We have been the people inside the poisoner's cabinet. We will see you next week. And remember, your loved ones are trying to kill you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.